Okay, we are plugged in and ready to rock and roll. Saturday the 2nd of April here in Oz, and Don Fox is rejoining me for a chat today. Always good to have you on, Don, for a chat on this podcast. Haven't chatted to you for a while though. It may have been a couple of months, but how you going?
Hey, I'm doing well. It's good to be back on with you, Adam.
You're busy, that's for sure.
Yes, I am.
You're always busy.
I run very hard to go not very far.
It's hard work. Just getting your website now up now, which is always donaldfox.wordpress.com. Your website, Don, is .wordpress.
Yep.
Have you ever thought about changing it just to the .com? Because just so people, I guess if they look for Donald Fox, there might be other Don Fox because it's quite a common name.
But just about, I mean, all my fans, you know, there's a few of them out there. They know where to find me. And
Donald Fox, yeah, .wordpress.com. I always just make sure people know it because it's a pretty in-depth website. And
okay, so why do I have the free WordPress? Well, okay, I pay them $20 a year to store files up there, but you know, I've got no budget. And could I do web development? Yeah, I've done websites and stuff before, so it's not that I couldn't do it. It's, A, I'd have to pay to host it somewhere, and then, you know, I don't have to worry about the security here, because WordPress takes care of that.
Yeah, it's pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, just for doing what I'm doing, you know, at least the next couple of years I see myself, you know, being stuck on the old WordPress here.
Yeah, it does the job.
Yeah,
sure.
Eventually I'll probably have my, you can't do any advertising on a free WordPress blog. Any advertising that you see on there is from WordPress. You know, I get absolutely zero.
Yeah, it's hard.
Revenue from any of it, yeah.
Yeah, I get a couple of donations here and there. It's
That's it, yeah. Very few and far between. Yeah, I'll get a 20 here and there. But yeah, as far as like revenue from WordPress, no, I get none.
It's hard. I mean, yeah, I have a domain and there's hosting and which is done by Renegade in the US. So I'll just put some money through there, but it costs to keep going. It's not easy, you know. It's time consuming to do this sort of stuff all the time and researching and getting the website ready and putting up stuff and you know, it's a draining ordeal sometimes, you know. And considering it's hard to really make anything.
It pays. Yeah, anybody that wants to do this, I'll tell you what it involves. Involves endless hours of work, being completely consumed by you know what's going on, what's already happened, analyzing everything. It never stops. You go to bed analyzing stuff. You wake up when your feet hit the floor. You start thinking again. And it pays nothing. So it's a lot of work and you get a lot of crap from, friends, family, and, all the Hasbara trolls on the internet. So if you want abuse, ridicule, endless hours of work, feel free.
Yeah.
You know, 20, 30 years ago in the United States, everybody had a pretty cushy life. Bills were paid. There wasn't this massive student loan debt. There were still plenty of jobs here in this country, and the standard of living was creeping up. So when you've got conditions like that, most people, they don't even care. Ah, the government's corrupt, so what? You know, I got a 3-car garage, and there's a boat out there, and, you know, I got a fridge full of food, and, you know, I got a 2,500 square foot house, and a flat screen TV, you know. Screw it. I don't care about all these conspiracy theories, but then when their job gets outsourced and they had to sell the boat and eventually they had to sell the house and downsize, now they're back in a Rambler and they're working two jobs, the wife's out working, and they see the country being flooded by non-whites and the standard of living to continually to go down the drain. Now there's a gap between the propaganda and reality. And then the bigger that gap gets, the more of a platform guys like you and me are going to have.
It's I did put up a story the other week about FBI, CIA controlled groups now flooding the internet, just basically seeking out, as with the Hezbollah trolls, seeking out anyone, really, just putting up alternative information, someone who has a website, if you're on social media, you know, just constantly trolling 24/7.
I do get my share of attention from those type of folks. And
you run into them. You don't never know who you're dealing with. That's what I always say to people on Facebook. You know, they've got fake profiles and fake names, and you think you're just dealing with a troll, but you know, you can be caught on with them for months. They'll just suck your life away on there, you know? And it's like getting worse and worse all the time. I mean, to the point now where some shows, I think the last show Dr. Rima did on YouTube would not upload with Meryl Dorey. That's just for our listeners here. Won't upload. A lot of problems there. Problems with our website a lot. Problems with loading and uploading and things being censored, just sort of creepy little things that didn't happen much before, I'm noticing, with a lot of people's websites and things now. So, you know, I'm wondering where they're going to go with this as more and more people become aware and awake and start more websites. And, you know, because I can tell you they don't want guys like you talking about JFK and 9/11 and nukes.
No, they don't.
And they don't want us doing shows like this. I mean, you know, they don't like it at all. And I think, as you said, the average Joe is just happy to have a fairly comfortable life and not buck the system, not rock the boat, you know. They've got a family, just live in the suburbs, and I'm going to keep my mouth shut. I'm not saying anything.
Exactly. You know, keep my head down.
It's comfortable just to keep, because if you've got a pretty good job and a comfortable life, you know, it's like, I know stuff's going on in there, you know, under the skin, under the surface, but I'm not going to buck it. I'm just going to let it go.
Yeah, it's like, let somebody else deal with that. I'm happy where I'm at. And there's less and less people like that now. And, you know, as the gap between reality and the propaganda gets larger, they can't hide it now. I mean, the United States has been getting flooded with Mexicans now for, really, it's been 40 years. But now it's just, with Obama, just wide open borders. And when you get a guy like Trump coming around saying, hey, you know what, we gotta build a fence, and then we should deport all these illegal aliens. Oh, you can't do that. You can't break up these families. I'm like, well, they're all here illegally. None of them should be.
People don't understand it.
Yeah.
It's why is it such a, I don't understand this because I follow it the best I can, but, you know, I've said this thousands of times on this podcast that, you know, you look at other countries, sure, you know, Latin America, Mexico is pretty crazy, and you can pretty much do whatever you want once you get in there, especially if you have some money. But I mean, there's a lot of countries, you know, in the world, in Asia, where we are, and outside, you know, the Middle East and many strictly religious Muslim countries, for example, you know, where you're not going to get away with much. I mean, you've got to toe the line in those countries. They have a strict way of living. And if you go there, you have to dress to their standard. You have to do as they do. You know, you don't want to get yourself in trouble in countries like Dubai and in Middle Eastern countries, in Singapore, in these types of places. Just for example, Muslim countries like Indonesia, in any of these places, in some African in countries and parts of the world, you know, you kind of want to go there if you're a white person, if you dare to travel there anyway. You know, the women have to dress pretty strictly, and you have to adapt to their way of life and kind of blend in and eat their food as you do, you know. I mean, when I've traveled, I've done that, you know, blend into cultures and just do as they do. But because we're Western white countries, you know, like the United States, Canada, Australia, Europe, these countries, the UK, you know, we're just meant to bend over backwards and take it because we are white and we're a Western nations. And then some guy named Donald Trump comes up and says, hey, let's build a wall. Which is really, to me, common sense. Because if it was if the shoe was on the other side, on the other foot, and you were doing that to Mexico, you know, you can guarantee yourself, you know, 100% they're going to do it to you. Very quick smart. But we're just meant to take this crap all the time, you know? All the time we're meant to cop it. and just shut up about it, you know. And it's really utterly ridiculous to me because, you know, from my perspective, what he's saying and doing is just utter common sense. And that's what Obama should have done a long time ago. That's what Australia does in a lot of ways, Don. You know, but we're surrounded by the oceans. But you know, you come here, if they come in here on boats, they go to detention centers, and they never get out of there. They're prisons, basically. And some people think that's very, very harsh what happens to them. You know, but I just can't understand America's borders being wide open and all sorts of criminals and all these people you do not want in the United States just flooding in at will. You know, at the expense of the American people and your healthcare system, at the expense of the American taxpayer and their way of life, just these people flooding in. Then what does he do? He comes out and says, well, we're going to put a wall up so you can't do that. And then suddenly he's a bad guy. You know, he's a racist. But it's common sense, isn't it, Don?
It is. What? If you're going to have a country, what's the first thing you have to have?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, by definition, you have to have borders. A country without borders is not a country. And that's, well, who are the people behind this massive immigration? Well, they're Jews. And, you know, I was just watching a David Duke video today, and he shows the headlines over in Israel. It's, hey, the immigration reform is in our strategic interest, is what they say, i.e., the destruction of white European society is in our best interest, which is what the goal is of these Jewish elites. It's the destruction of white European societies.
That's it.
And we see these same guys involved in, you know, if you start researching, you know, the conspiracies, quote unquote, you're going to see a lot of these kosher characters popping up. You know, last fall I just sent out an email to some of my research buddies, and you know, it's a synopsis of the JFK assassination. And this is just kind of a broad overview of what happened. You know, who was behind it at certain points. Okay, so I just kind of threw out some points here. No, we'll just go over this quick. Okay, so first point. One, you know, why was JFK in Dallas in the first place? Well, he was lured there to raise money for the 64 election. There's a lot of wealthy Jewish Democratic donors in Dallas, and they were the ones that were behind the trip to start with. And then two, Jew Sam Bloom, who was on the Citizens Council, he got the motorcade route changed to maneuver Kennedy into the kill zone on Elm Street.
That's right.
And Bloom also made sure that the motorcade route was published in the newspapers. And then three, you got Jew Abraham Zapruder, who filmed the Kennedy's execution. And later on, Zapruder's family would receive a massive payoff courtesy of Jew Ken Feinberg, you know, he of 9/11 and the Penn State sex scandal fame and the BP oil spill, and he determined the fair market value of the film. So here's Feinberg. He doled out all the compensation to the 9/11 victims, and here he is deciding how much the Zapruder family should get for the Zapruder film. And then the fourth point I had was shots were fired from the Jew-owned uranium mining company window, which was in the Jew-owned Daltex building. And the uranium mining company was providing material, nuclear material, for Israel's nuclear weapons program. So here's a company that is sending uranium illegally to Israel to build illegal nuclear weapons, and they're in on the assassination of the President of the United States. Okay, and then the fifth point I had was Jew Sam Bloom was arranged for Lee Oswald's public transfer from the Dallas Police Department basement over to the, I think it was the city jail. And of course, he never made it there. He got taken out. And then, so okay, after Kennedy was shot, then, here's the sixth point I had was, Jew, crypto Jew slash Freemason, Lyndon Johnson was sworn in on Air Force One as the president, before JFK's body was even cold. So here we had Jews arrange, for Kennedy's trip. They get the route published in the paper. They filmed it. They shot the patsy in the basement. And a Jew took over. Yeah, okay. And point seven was, Jew Jack Rubenstein, you know, Jack Ruby, executed the patsy, you know, Lee Oswald, in the basement of the Dallas police station on national television on Sunday morning. So there's a, I mean, and there's a lot of, speculation that Jack Ruby was really a Mossad agent. We can probably go into that in another show, but there's quite a bit of evidence there that, that Jack Ruby was Mossad, not mafia.
Israeli intelligence.
Yeah.
Yep. Everywhere.
Basically.
All
yeah.
events. And, all, you know, all these type of events.
And then point eight here, so then, well, the Jew-owned media, I mean, let's face it, all the TV networks, the major newspapers, they're all owned by Jews. They put out the lone gunman cover story. So Jewish oligarchy is covering all this up. And then nine, so of course, to backstop all of this, you've got several Jewish lawyers on the Warren Commission, including Arlen Specter, who came up with the single bullet theory. Perhaps the greatest fraud ever perpetrated on the American public.
The magic bullet.
Yep, the magic bullet. That came from a Jew lawyer. And point 10. So Clay Shaw was the only person ever prosecuted publicly for JFK's murder. Shaw's handler was Jew Louis M. Bloomfield, who was a front man for the Jewish oligarch Bronfman crime family. And that's the Perm Index connection. You can go to YouTube, just punch in Don Fox Perm Index. Me and Gary did a show on that last year that was pretty good. And then point 11 here, Israel's illicit nuclear weapons program blossoms under the LBJ administration. And then, 12, the USS Liberty incident. So LBJ, you know, crypto Jew and, Israel conspired to attack a defenseless U.S. spy ship, the USS Liberty. They wanted to blame the attack on Egypt and then use that to justify the nuking of Cairo. They had to call back the planes that were going to drop nuclear bombs on Cairo just minutes before they were to fly over Cairo. So that they might have killed a million innocent people there out of that false flag. Yeah, it was a tragedy to what happened to the guys on that ship. They got napalmed and shot, blown up. But a far bigger tragedy was averted because they were so brave and hung on. Had that ship been sunk, Cairo surely would have been nuked. So that's one way to look at what happened in Dallas on the 22nd of November 1963. Those are just some dots you can connect.
Yeah.
Oh, and yeah, one other point about Jack Ruby. Now, Friday night, Jack Ruby was at Oswald's press conference, and he was serving as an interpreter for Israeli reporters. So, first of all, you know, we were talking about this. Okay, why were Israeli reporters there already? They caught a flight and flew over. That was a midnight press conference. So, within 12 hours, you know, it's logistically possible. But you would think maybe they wouldn't be there for a day or two. Sometimes it's hard to book flights or whatever, but you know, who knows how they actually got there. Nobody's actually identified those guys, and it would be interesting to see if somebody could figure out who they were. And you know, the second thing to talk about there, so if you do have Israeli reporters at this Oswald press conference, then why do they need a strip club owner to serve as a translator?
Yeah.
you know, what's going on there? Why would major newspaper reporters enlist the services of a strip club owner to do their translating? Well, I think it's because Ruby was actually a Mossad agent, and he was one of their guys. That's why he was there. And a lot of intelligence people are multilingual. That's fairly common. So it, when you look at it from that angle, it makes perfect sense why Jack Ruby was there. But from the cover story point of view, it makes no sense at all.
Hmm.
So we can see just, you know, right from beginning to end there, a lot of Jewish involvement. Now there's, you know, as a conspiracy theorist, you know, we like to get into a lot of minutiae, you know, how many shots were fired, you know, where were they fired from? Who were the assassins? How much material was missing from C-399? You know, all that stuff, we love that, you know, as a conspiracy theorist. But sometimes you gotta take that 5,000 or that 10,000 foot view of the thing.
It's, yeah. It, I mean, what would be your views if we look at that and say, if we look at more common or more, recent events, these so-called terror attacks and bombings in Brussels and stuff. And back to 9/11 and stuff, and looking at Saudi involvement and CIA, and we're talking about Israeli involvement. What's your view on that, and where do you think the orders are coming from? Do you think it's coming from inside Israel, or, you know, you get that feeling that there are a lot of good Jewish people out there who know what's going on as well, who are on our side. You wonder with these European sort of type Jews what their plans are for Israel. But you wonder where the actual commands are coming from within the United States. Because you look at CIA and FBI or whatever involvement, and they've mentioned Saudi money being pumped in and all this. But, you know, you sort of wonder, we look at AIPAC in the US, you sort of wonder where it's actually all coming from, you know? I mean, coming from Europe, from London, from
City of London,
where the commands are coming from, because we look at Israel and we blame them directly, but you got to feel for the average Jew around the world or in Israel on the ground who doesn't really have a clue what's going on here.
Now the lesser Jews don't.
Yeah, I feel for them a little bit. You know,
they're kind of our genetic enemy in certain respects, and we can probably get into that in a different show. But you know, the average Jew that works in a cubicle really doesn't have any idea that any of this stuff's going on. No, yeah. They're not let in on it. In fact, part of the Holocaust angle was to scare Jews out of Germany and make them move to Israel.
Exactly.
You know, the big elite Jews. I mean, we're not talking about the guy down the street. You know, these are obviously, you know, these are top of the food chain type guys that we're talking about here. And as I've said before and bears repeating, there's a direct historical path from Dealey Plaza to New York on 9/11. I think in both instances, what you really can glean from both of these is that, hey, there is a power structure above your visible national government.
Exactly. We're trying to make people understand that.
Yeah, if John F. Kennedy ran anything, do you think they would have been able to shoot him in the middle of the street in broad daylight at high noon?
Yeah, you need some. You don't just need guts and balls to do that.
No,
as you said, you're not gonna be able to just blow the head off a. I mean, of course, it's a president, it's a powerful man, but it makes you understand that when these people want to play hardball, they just blow the head off a president. That's what they're prepared to do. Bring down buildings in front of the whole world, sacrifice people. When push comes to shove, you can clearly see when things get serious for these people, they just swipe away whatever's there, whether it's a president, whether it's buildings, whatever it is, whether it's a a country, a war, whatever it is, you can see this shadowy power elite behind the system that is propped up in front of us, that we believe to be our governments and we put our faith and trust in, and we think that they run the show. But when, as I said, when push comes to shove, you can see they just swipe it away.
Yeah, there's definitely, yeah, when the rubber hits the road, there is a level of power above the visible national government. And everyone's like, well, Wall Street. You remember the few years ago we had the Wall Street protests. And yeah, there's a certain amount of power on Wall Street. There's no question about that. But again, if Wall Street ran everything, how could their buildings get nuked at 9 in the morning, you know, on a Tuesday, fall day, you know? And so obviously, Wall Street's a piece of the puzzle. There's no question about it. A lot of money's flowing through there, but they obviously cannot be the top of the food chain. So I think 9/11 was another one of those signals. Hey, you don't run anything. It was a strike at the heart of American financial and military might. You know, they nuked the Pentagon, and you know, we could probably cover that on a future show too. We could break that down. And they nuked New York, the biggest buildings in America's biggest city.
It's blown into
microscopic nanoparticles.
But you know, it's a modern day Kennedy, isn't it? I mean, I don't know. Yeah. It's like you look at what was done to Germany. And, you know, the atrocities and utter horror always implies to me that just seems satanic to me, you know, and then you look at a president having his head blown off, you know, and you look at those buildings being brought down.
These are evil deeds.
This military black budgets, is this like a con? I mean, when you look at reports of $52.6 billion just going down a black hole, and that was in 2013 to these black budgets, and these whistleblowers supposedly saying, hey, you know, these trillions of dollars being ciphered out of the US alone over the years. These guys just saying, I don't know where the money went, in front of Congress, just lying, and no one being able to touch these people, and this money going, that's what we've heard, we've utterly heard that, this trillions of dollars going to the City of London, to the Vatican, to Israel, and for black operations. So I think people need to understand that these terror attacks and these killings and mass murder being committed in different countries that are being blamed on ISIS, which is being funded by this money. You know, these are obviously, from what we've heard, contract killers. That's all they are. They're just like robots. Yep. They contract them out, they do their killings, and they get paid, and they go and probably either take more jobs or go and retire or wherever. But this sort of black budget, is that something you've looked in? Is that what's sort of happening here? Because you're wondering, you know, when you're looking at somewhere like the US.
Yeah, there's a lot of money floating around. Now let's talk about that. Let's just touch on that for a second. Okay. On September 10th, 2001, Donald Rumsfeld got up there on a Monday morning. Remember, September 10th was a Monday because 9/11 was on a Tuesday. I remember it well. On Monday morning, Donald Rumsfeld got up in front of the national press and said, hey, we can't account for, was it $2.3 trillion worth of transactions? We just don't know what happened. We can't find the money. Where did it go? And who was the comptroller of the Pentagon at that time? Rabbi Dov Zakheim. And, you know, we'll get to him in a minute. I had a post here about a month ago come out, a little over a month. All the Jews involved in 9/11, and you know, at the top of the list is Larry Silverstein. And now a video just came out here, was it a week or so ago, where he admits that they were designing the blueprints of the new Building 7 back in April of 2000.
Okay, yeah, I just had that on. I was staring at that right now. I hadn't seen that before. That's on your website. March 22nd, 2016, Larry Silverstein, New World Trade Center 7 design in April of 2000.
So a year and a half before 9/11, they're hard at work
So, I mean, obviously the official story is just...
Come on, Don, it's laughable. Conspiracy theorist again. Here we go with your conspiracy theories.
Yeah, and I'm a proud conspiracy theorist at this point, okay? Do not lump me in with all these coincidence theorists.
But you can clearly see that it's not only being pre-designed and pre-planned and orchestrated, but also all the mechanisms going on behind this machine, getting all this set up. And it just, they're trying to make out like it's random, you know? Arab hijackers take the planes. Box cutters. Oh, come on.
Jet fuel.
Men still believe this. And it's like, people aren't seeing this. You know, that was all pre-planned. You know, it's,
nobody wants to admit that, but I'm like,
I guess it's too scary for him.
Yeah, as it was going down, I thought, man, this is just taking place with this military precision. And I'm like, somebody had to be in on it. I didn't know who then or what or why they did it, you know, back in 2001. Then, you know, after you watched, it was a devastating event in this country. I mean, literally the population was in shock.
It's a spiritual, a psychological, it's in every single possible human level that you can conjure up. It's an attack on our senses, everything. It just, you know, people will never live it down, ever.
No, people were just numb for like 6 months.
You just can't believe it, that's something that can happen in broad daylight.
How does this, in the United States of America, with this huge military and all this technology, how does something like this go down? It hit people on a level they weren't prepared for it. And as the years go on, you know, again, we talk about the gap between the cover story and reality. It's just 9/11 truth is now really starting to kind of percolate up again because there's new people that were too young to know what was going on back then. They're now starting to look at it. And, you know, with the rise of the alt-right, we're seeing more people taking a second look or maybe even a first look at 9/11.
I always thought it was, I was talking about it, just going into the lead up before 9/11, obviously before it happened in the United States when obviously no one on the ground knew this was going to take place, you know. But the subliminal type kind of advertising, going on, did you do any looking into that? Like, was there a preparation taking place, for the psyche of the world, just the Americans alone? Was there things going on, I wonder, you know, in advertising, in magazines, in TV?
I heard The Simpsons had that. And see, I don't watch a lot of TV now. I didn't watch it much back then. Back then, I had a full-time job, and I was going to school almost on a full-time basis. So I was pretty wrapped up in all of that. I wasn't watching The Simpsons much, or I would watch, you know, I'd catch a football or basketball or a baseball game, and that'd be about it.
There's a lot of those shows. There was a Teenage Ninja Mutant Turtles one as well, cartoon.
There's a lot of other people that have done. Yeah. There's a lot of people that have done work on that, the foreshadowing in the media. And that was definitely going on.
The Hollywood stuff like conditioning. You know, it's really weird. It makes you feel like you're living in a dream when you start to look at that side of things as well. And then the way they just perfectly executed it. You know, it was like a lightning bolt strike to your head in the middle of the day. It was
it definitely was.
I mean,
yeah.
People going to work, a crystal blue day, you know, going on with their lives as normal. It is unbelievable, you know. Now, we've talked about that with you before with the Hollywood movies and stuff and people being so, and that line being blurred of being what's real and what's not, you know, because people are so used to watching films and movies where this, the Pentagon's getting attacked and it's all White House down and all these attacks going on and you're watching in a movie, but I guess, you know, you watch that on TV, you can't distinguish what's real and what's not. It's just so shocking for the senses, you know?
Yeah, some of my friends call it the Talmud vision or, what's the other one they call it? There's a couple names for it where it's just basically you're getting fed some Jewish propaganda on the flat screen, you know, as it were.
Well, it's, you know, to see that stuff about Israel military, you know, army pumping in pornography into houses in Iraq and those countries that they blew up,
yep.
You know, that I didn't believe that at first. Do you know a bit about that?
I've heard about that. Yeah, that's what they do. They talk about the need to destroy
a lot
social
of people
order.
Wouldn't believe that.
Yeah, they use pornography to to break down the functioning social order. See, a healthy society is anathema to a Jew. So the Jews must destroy functioning human society. That they can't have that. So that's why you see all this gay marriage and the all the transgender, all this stuff. It's all Jewish.
On that subject, I put a article up on the Crass Files called Queering the Schools. I don't know if you read that. It was gay activist groups with teachers' unions are importing a disturbing agenda into American schools happening here. It's saying school districts that refuse to go along with homosexual agenda now must contend with American Civil Liberties Union as well. The ACLU's Lesbian and Gay Rights Project has launched a national effort called Every Student, Every School that plans to sue on First Amendment grounds any school that refuses gay, straight student clubs on its premises. Already schools in Kentucky and Texas face legal action. I mean, and so...
Yep, so we're going to... See, now we're gonna destroy your social order with our Jewish lawyers.
There you go, you know? That's unbelievable. And we're also hearing in the UK where they're wanting kids to start going to being schooled at 2 years old, and they want to extend the schooling hours. You know, so you've got these poor kids in there from 7 a.m. till 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock at night. And that's what David Icke said. They're prison camps. That's what they are.
That's what it is.
Yep. Indoctrination prison camps where they're turning your kids into this. Bisexuals and homosexuals and all this sort of stuff. And, the power that these, gay, lesbian, transgender, transsexual groups have, it's happening here in Australia as well. Bisexual, gay, lesbian awareness days and weeks, when teachers should be bloody well teaching kids. You know, I mean, you think of how bad, the schools are anyway, and that everything they teach is an absolute lie about our history, for starters, and now they're getting this stuff in to our kids is really staggering.
It's all degenerate. It's all rotten. Yeah, and it's all designed at breaking down human society. That's what the goal is, especially white human society. That's their number one target, and we'll touch on that in a minute. But you know, maybe getting back to 9/11. Before we wander too far off of the subject, so we can't just hammer Larry Silverstein and let the other guys off the hook. So number two,
not Frank Lowy. Can't leave him
off. Number two on my list was Frank Lowy.
We got him
a
here.
Czechoslovakian-born Jew and the owner of Westfield America, which is a pretty big.
He just ruined our local mall, Don. We had a great local Ringer Mall, and Westfield gobbled it up, and now they've just destroyed it. They've just destroyed it. It's an utter mess. It was a great mall.
Yeah.
He's come in and he wanted to make more money, and they've knocked it all down. They've tried to get greedy, and it's not working. But that's what he does. Yeah.
So Frank Lowy, he's a big player in 9/11.
As you said, Westfield owner, Westfield America, Westfield Australia, big Westfield malls. He had the Westfield malls at the World Trade Center. It's saying on your website here approximately 427,000 square feet of retail floor space.
So we had a little remodel job.
Jesus.
Going on, yeah.
Frank Lowy is, as you said, a Czechoslovakian-born Jew as well.
So he had a career in real estate. he was a member of the Golani Brigade and fought in the Israel War of Independence. And before that, he was a member of Haganah, a Jewish terrorist organization. he spent 3 months of the year at his home in Israel, and has been described by the Sydney Morning Herald as a self-made man with a strong interest in the Holocaust and Israeli politics.
Did you see Don when he fell off the stage here in Australia at the soccer game?
Oh, no, I didn't see that.
You didn't see that? Yeah, he was up there at a soccer football match, and fell off the stage quite high, straight onto his head, upside down.
Ouch.
He copped it. Yeah.
Well, you know, maybe that's a little bit of karma coming back for
he made it out.
Yeah. Probably got a nice lump out of that deal, though.
But, yeah, you know, we've got to watch these sporting events, and he's into our soccer football federations and our malls. He's just in everything, you know. It's kind of sickening as an Australian to see him up there.
You know, yeah, these people. It's hard to escape him. And then
Frank Lowy's Don is a guy that Australians wouldn't see. He has a lot of power in our government here. You know, they wouldn't see him as, but he's a guy that you don't see sort of working hand in hand with the government, but has a lot of power there. Absolutely.
Well, these real estate guys that have a lot of money, yeah, they can make their way through. And one aspect of 9/11, I think, that gets overlooked, and this is where Louis Eisenberg comes in. He was the head of the Port Authority of New York, New Jersey, and he authorized the lease transfer to Silverstein and Lowy. Eisenberg was a large contributor to the Bush-Cheney presidential campaign, as well as a partner in the Jewish bank Goldman Sachs. Eisenberg has been a member of the planning board of the United States, the United Jewish Appeal / United Jewish Federation, pro-Israeli government pressure groups in the U.S.
People need to read that on as well, Eisenberg being the head of the Port Authority of New York.
The Port Authority was central in this whole disaster. They were the ones pushing for the privatization of the Twin Towers. And if they were not on board with what happened on 9/11, there's no way it could have happened. The New York, New Jersey Port Authority has got its thumbprints all over this. You know, everybody, Bush, Cheney, all this and that. But the New York Port Authority is really something to look at. If you're out there digging into this at home, folks. You know, I've done some work on it. I know they were centrally involved, but there's a lot of, I've talked to a few people. And yeah, there's a lot of skeletons in the closet there at the Port Authority.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. So we get that as well in our transport. Whole train systems, all that, Mossad or Jewish intelligence operations going on there, you know. So-called Lint Cafe terrorist attack here. I'm wondering if there will be more, but they seem to be all through our system as well. These are important grids, aren't they? Especially when you're looking at 9/11.
Yeah.
You know, someone would say the Port Authority, what? Well, New York City Port Authority.
Yeah, they
Eisenberg.
They were responsible for, you know, a lot of functions going on down there, the upkeep, you know, collecting tolls, you know, stuff like that. And our last prominent Jew in the control of the World Trade Center is none other than Ronald Lauder, billionaire Estee Lauder cosmetics magnate.
This is interesting. Estee Lauder cosmetics magnate.
Yeah. Ronald Lauder, yeah. He was the chairman. He was the chairman of New York Governor George Pataki's Commission on Privatization.
He's Jewish?
Yes.
Lauder. Yeah. So he's this is the Jews into the cosmetics. Very, very strong in that, in the makeup cosmetics, especially the magazines, all that stuff as well. Yeah. The clothes, fashion. Very big.
Yeah, so he lobbied hard for the privatization of the World Trade Center, and he was also instrumental in the successful privatization of the former Stewart Air Force Base. And oddly, the flight paths of 175 and Flight 11 converged directly over this airport. So again, if you're a coincidence theorist, you know that privatization of the airport really doesn't mean anything, but if you look at who's involved in 9/11 and what was going on, then that makes more sense. Now, Flight 11 didn't actually take off that day, but that's where they, that's a whole other kettle of fish. Were the flights real, this and that? And we could probably do a whole show on that, although I'm by no means the most leading authority on the 9/11 planes. Suffice it to say that no commercial plane crashed anywhere on 9/11.
Yeah. I don't think any planes hit the towers at all.
No, I don't either, no.
It was a sleight of hand, like a big David Copperfield trick.
Yep.
Like a magic trick.
Yeah, either it was either CGI or it was a hologram.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, well, of course, if you're going to pull off something like this, you have to control the security. So the WTC security was in Zionist hands.
We're looking at that, yeah. Yeah, I mean, just what with the points we've gone through now. And going back as well to the black budget with all that money disappearing, there's a lot of money behind the scenes to run this, but having, as we've just talked about, these guys and these billionaires, running these companies and ports and having the people in the right place. Wow, that's power, man.
Exactly. This is analyzing what really, this is how the world really works, folks. You know, it isn't just random events and, you know, people don't just amass large fortunes by accident.
These people are all sick pedophiles as well.
I would imagine they are.
Absolutely, man. I wouldn't want to know what they do, you know?
I don't either. I don't want to run into them on a personal level.
But I guess you're the same, you know? These port authorities, and we'll keep moving here, are down the points that you have. But I guess the average Joe, you know, the average guys just doing their day-to-day job in these places didn't have a clue what was going on, you know? It's all...
No.
They're just toeing the line, and I guess it was so strictly organized and controlled, they wouldn't have known. It would have been a slider trick. It would have been a slider hand for them as well. They would have just been caught up in it, you know?
The minds of the goyim must be preoccupied with industry and trade.
Exactly. And if you do see anything suspicious and open your mouth, you're going to die.
Pretty much, yeah.
You're going to disappear.
But you must spend your whole life chasing your tail for that almighty shekel. And if you... You know, you stick your head up above that fray,
stick your head above the mud, yeah. Let's keep moving anyway on this, Ronald Lauder, a cosmetics magnate.
Yeah.
Estee Lauder, wow.
Yeah, Estee Lauder, yeah. You don't, when you think of 9/11, you don't think of Estee Lauder, do you?
No, like these kind of fragrance billionaires, you struggle, don't you, to think of someone like Ronald Lauder, how much money these cosmetic magnates really have, you know?
That is a big pile of cash right there.
God, you know? Calvin Klein, you know? Goldman Sachs. Gee, I don't think the average person who's going to listen to this, you can't comprehend the money these guys have, and that kind of power and money, well, you know, it's pretty easy for them to pretty much do whatever the bloody hell they want.
Yeah. So of course, you know, if you're gonna have, you know, powerful Jews owning the World Trade Center complex, of course you're gonna have a big Jew running the security, and you had Jerome Hauer, who was also the person chosen to run Mayor Rudy Giuliani's Office of Security, or Office of Emergency Management, from 96 to 2000. He's the key individual that pushed for this office to be placed in Silverstein's Building 7.
Okay, so you're talking about emergency management here.
Yep.
With key individuals going into office placed in Silverstein's Building 7.
Yep. Yeah, he was the one pushing for that.
That's the third tallest building to collapse on that day for no reason.
Yeah, and Building 7 was no, you know, next to the towers, everybody thinks it's the small building. Well, it was 47 stories tall.
Oh, man, you know, for us in Sydney, that's huge.
Yeah, this is the Building 7 in and of itself would be the tallest building in 13 different states, I believe, in the United States.
Just disappearing for no reason.
Yeah, poof, gone in 6.5 seconds. and there's a huge pyroclastic flow of dust and debris going down the street after it went. And
that's like watching a cartoon, seeing that. Yep. See, you're like, what? What? This thing just... it's like taking the curtains away, and it's just gone.
Poof, yeah. And then, of course, there was Israeli espionage all around 9/11. Shortly before 9/11, 140 Israelis had been arrested for suspected espionage, some of them posing as art students. These suspects targeted or penetrated military bases, DEA, FBI, Secret Service, ATF, U.S. Customs, IRS, INS, EPA, Interior Department, U.S. Marshals Service, and various U.S. Attorney's Offices. Secret government offices enlisted private homes of law enforcement / intelligence officers. Most of the suspects served in military intelligence, electronic surveillance intercept, and or explosive ordnance units. So these art students...
Yep.
...were air quotes there, insert your own air quote.
We've had that here as well.
Yeah.
I saw it on our main news a while ago. I didn't know so much about that. This is going back a bit, yeah, about these art students. They've caught them here. And I've seen them on the border security shows as well in the airports. I saw one show. It was Israeli art students, and they claim they're going around selling the art, but here you go. Very interesting.
Yeah, they're definitely Israeli intelligence operatives.
And they're only young guys. I mean, you wouldn't sort of think, you know. They're just young students.
Yep. And then, okay, so after, so before 9/11, you had 140 of them arrested for suspected espionage. And then after 9/11, over 60 Israelis were detained, either under the Patriot Anti-Terrorism Act or for immigration violations. Some of them were active Israeli military personnel. A number of them failed polygraph examinations when questioned for surveillance activities against the U.S.
And you got here dozens of Israelis arrested in American malls, kiosks, selling toys, acting as front for spying operations.
Yeah, of course, the most infamous of these arrests were the dancing Israelis.
Yeah.
We are not your problem. Yeah, Sivan Kurzberg ended up on an Israeli talk show, and he stated that they were there to document the event. Well, who knew there was going to be an event to document?
Yeah.
It was just a really nice September day in New York City. Nobody knew. It was not publicly announced that every building with a WTC prefix was going to get flattened that day. But nonetheless, there he was there to document the event.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so he got arrested, and he told the arresting officer, hey, we're not your problem. Your problem is our problems. The Palestinians are the problem.
Yeah, yeah.
So they want to blame Palestinians for...
I'm kind of surprised to hear Donald Trump talk about that at the APEC meeting, blaming Palestine and Iran,
which
is a little bit bit much for me personally. I like the guy and many of his a lot of what he's doing, but that was a bit, you know, I don't know what his angle is there, but the, you know, to blame Palestine. For what, what have they done? I mean, you know, their whole bloody country's been turned to dust, you know?
Yeah, they're getting wiped out, yeah.
Iran have done nothing, really. I mean, what have they ever done?
Well, they have not adopted a Rothschild central bank.
What's your idea on, that's another show, isn't it, with Trump?
We'll do a Trump show here, especially as this... This campaign's really starting to heat up now. And, another aspect of 9/11 you don't hear a ton about was the truck bomb destined for George Washington Bridge. Now, Gordon Duff over at Veterans Today talks about that quite a bit. The Jerusalem Post later reported that a white van containing a bomb was stopped as it approached the George Washington Bridge, but the ethnicity of the suspects was not revealed. This is what the Jerusalem Post reported back on September 12th. Quote, American security services overnight stopped a car bomb on the George Washington Bridge. The van, packed with explosives, was stopped on an approach ramp to the bridge. Authorities suspect the terrorists intended to blow up the main crossing between New Jersey and New York. So not only did they want to bring down the buildings, they wanted to destroy the escape routes. And then there was the infamous mural van. One of the more bizarre events of the day came in the form of a mysterious white van parked a few blocks away from the Twin Towers on 6th and King. It had a mural painted on the side that depicted a jetliner crashing into the Twin Towers and exploding. Now, I'm sure that's...
This is all documented as well.
Yeah, oh yeah, you can Google it.
People are going to say, come on, Don, what? But it's you can see it all, yeah. Yeah, it's yeah, weird, I know, but it's true.
Yeah, there's a bunch of YouTube videos on the mural van, yeah.
That's unbelievable in itself.
Yeah. I mean. And then, you know, we're not doing the most thorough, deep investigation here. We're just kind of throwing out a few key points, and you can kind of connect the dots here at home yourself. And then, yeah, one of my favorites was the Urban Moving Systems van. All of the white vans belong to the company Urban Moving Systems under the direction of Dominic Suter, an Israeli spy who immediately fled to Israel after the attacks. It was confirmed by two former CIA officers that this Israeli company was a front operation for the Mossad. The two CIA sources noted that moving vans were a common intelligence cover. The Israelis were held in custody for 71 days before being quietly released by Zionist Michael Cheretov, who was head of the Justice Department Criminal Division at the time.
Just a little side note here as we go through this, when you're talking about CIA sources talking about this and, you know, CIA American intelligence uncovering this and letting people know this about these Zionist activities and these traitorous Jews in America at the time doing all this. What's going on? I mean, obviously the Americans are allowing it to happen, but then on the other side of the coin, do you actually have proper investigations going on? I mean, is there a system in the US where they really want to expose and tackle this Israeli problem, but you know, there's another side where they're not being allowed either. It's like it's really crazy.
There is no political will to investigate.
But there's obviously in the American government and within the CIA, FBI, and these groups, they know what's going on, and they're allowing.
Oh,
it.
Yeah,
but there must
yeah,
be well, guys in there that want to stamp it out as well, that are trying to do the good thing. Or is it all completely controlled over there in America?
Those guys get weeded out, you know, fairly early on.
Would you say it's more leaning towards being completely Zionist controlled? I mean, obviously the average cop on the ground and guy, they don't really know what's going on, or they might have their views, but sort of the most important bits, I mean, would be dominated.
Well, Jews are 2% of the population, yet we got four of them on the Supreme Court. I mean...
There must be elements in the CIA and your government that want to make a change here pretty quick.
Well, see, but when you dig down deep, what is the CIA? Well, if you do any research on the CIA itself, you find out, well, they work for the big fat Wall Street banks.
Yeah,
well,
it's a front.
Yeah, who owns the Wall Street banks? You know,
the
Jewish oligarchy. Yeah, so is the CIA any real opposition to the Mossad? No. No, my boy Dennis Camino, he just calls the CIA. It's just basically the Mossad West. The CIA, it's just basically the Mossad West. the CIA. It's just basically the Mossad West.